To this strong questions, Taylor.
I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania.
You know, as you know, I've been everywhere,
man. Yeah,
that's one of our several mottos. It's like my daughter Laya says in our kitchen, our motto is "We do not measure."
That's great. You should get that into like a little.
I definitely need that sign for my kitchen.
Yeah.
Like a very country style sign.
Yeah. Like a hex, maybe a barn.
Or you could get a yard sign. In this house, we do not measure.
Right. Of course, then.
Or just like measure with a line through it.
Yes.
Yeah.
No measure.
Yes. Yes. That's good. Or even just like a set of measuring spoons.
Yeah. Why don't we get started?
Sure.
My name is Taylor Lightman. This is Barnstorming PA, a podcast about politics and culture in Pennsylvania and the world broadly, really. I do neighborhood revitalization work. I used to be more involved in politics or be professionally involved in politics. As always, I'm happy to be here with my co-producer, Jordy Comas.
Thanks, Taylor. This is Jordy. I don't really like New Year's resolutions, but I just remembered that I decided to try and work on speaking a little more slowly. This is probably because I've been listening to our past podcasts. Can you retrain yourself to like in conversation? I see some nodding heads, but yeah, this is Jordy Comas, professional hat rack. We just had a reorganization meeting, for the borough council and,
Yeah, what's your new title?
Yeah, my friends joke that I have more titles than Daenerys Targaryen. I think I'm the chair of the new Public Works and Community Development Committee. And
you're the chair of it, or you're?
I think so.
Okay.
There was some shuffling, but the reorganization meetings are. Always fun. I mean, the nice thing was seeing people swear their oath of office. And I didn't know until I was sworn in that even at the level of borough council, we swear an oath to uphold the fidelity of the U.S. and the Pennsylvania constitutions. That tugs at my little geeky good government heartstrings a little bit. So that's me. Let me throw it to Dwayne and then Jenna to say hi, just because I saw that she was taking a sip of coffee or something. Dwayne, you want to say hi?
Yes, thanks, Jordy and everyone. I'm glad to be here. My name's Dwayne Heisler. My day job is with SEIU Healthcare Pennsylvania, which is Service Employees Union, right? Woo-hoo. Union. So union guy, but I'm also on the executive committee for the State Democratic Party. I'm the chair of the Progressive Caucus for the state of Pennsylvania. So I kind of have some party stuff going on, and I'm very involved with local progressive organizations in Northeast PA. Board of directors are kind of the steering teams for several progressive organizations. So progressive groups, party, and unions, trying to
grab union in the front, party in the back.
Oh my God, you didn't just say that. I don't know. Can people see me blush? So it's time to turn it over to Jenna. Jenna, rescue me.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jenna Henry. I am the deputy director of Better PA, which is a progressive nonprofit organization in Pennsylvania, working to defend democracy currently, which we have more work than we can handle. So, really, really happy to be here.
Nice. I did my reaction clap on Zoom. Thank you for your work. And prescient for today's episode. Today we're going to be, we did an episode entitled Fuck White Supremacy in the immediate aftermath of the January 6th insurrection. It is January 5th at the time that we're recording this. And so we're hoping to have this up on the exact day, January 6th. And what we're trying to do in this episode is revisit just what has happened in the last year and just sort of 1 year out, how we're thinking about this event. And Jordy, I think you came up with the question, so I'm just going to throw it to you to sort of ask our first question.
Sure. I mean, the first one is, you know, each of us individually, do you have a sense of how your own individual response has changed or hasn't changed? Just for people who maybe heard the first one and we were re-listening to it, but and several of us were on the one we did a year ago. Emotions were very raw, and there was a mix of rage and also, you know, talking about how we were shocked but not surprised. You know, I think both Sam and Nathan talked about this has been years in the coming. So, Taylor, do you want to go first?
Sure, I can go first. If you recall my reaction in the immediate aftermath of it, I had been living in Europe for the majority of the Trump presidency. And so my reaction was mostly just one of embarrassment, I think, and just kind of feeling like, because we had essentially shattered all of our alliances at that time, that we were, as a country, much less safe. And I think people's immediate reactions was on the internal politics of it all into the country. But I think my immediate reaction was more based on this is making us look horrible on the world stage, and I don't think we'll recover from this anytime soon. I still think that's true. And I guess I'm just kind of surprised at how much I think we're weaker than we were then, even still, because we haven't really done any of the accountability work. And so I'm still embarrassed, and I still think that it has just done irreparable harm to our international relations. And yeah, I think we haven't done the work, frankly. That's my general. So yeah. I guess my initial response has not changed.
Right. Your initial response has changed. I mean, you know, you were living in Europe then, and you've moved back to the United States now. So it's interesting that, did you still feel like you're, you sort of have those antenna or radar out, right? The sort of awareness of as an American, how people might respond to you, or you didn't quite say this, I'm putting words in your mouth, but, you know, do you feel an obligation to like explain what the hell is going on?
I'm actually in Europe right now. And I do feel, an obligation to be a, there are not many Americans in Sweden right now because we're not technically allowed to enter. So
that's something you should be saying.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm here legally. You don't really run into that many Americans here. And I do feel an obligation, when I'm around other people to like, just be a calm person that's with it. And
I keep on expecting a hook to come now and a Zoom screen, like
especially like not legally allowed, but technically I'm okay or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to get into this right now. No, but you're technically not allowed to fly from the U.S. But if you fly from a third country, it's okay.
Our new podcast, International Legal Loopholes with Taylor.
I didn't even have to take a COVID test to get here.
Yikes.
I mean, some part of me just a little bit, and I'm just being 100% here, Taylor, was a little bit like, we're not as strong. And like the part of me that's like anti-imperialist is like, good, right? Like, is it, you know what I mean? Like, what do you mean by we're not as strong as we were?
Me, I think we're just weaker. I mean, we haven't done any of the work, you know, we haven't addressed any of the fundamental problems, you know, this America's, I don't even want to call it flirtation with fascism. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else to call this. And it wasn't really a flirtation. It was kind of a, you know, going to second base. Yeah.
Coming out. Yeah. Coming up. This could go both erotic and dark fast.
Yeah, this happens because you know, the elite are destroying our faith in democracy. We have these incredibly deep economic and racial divisions in our society. We haven't done any of the work to repair those. I'm very proud of the work that the Biden administration has done. I think they're doing a tremendous job, but we haven't done anything to repair our relationship with the truth. That's generational work, and we're kind of in the same spot, and we haven't done the accountability work from the people that planned and enacted and incited this insurrection. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I agree that we're in a much worse position now, because the insurrection was shocking, and it's gotten all this media attention and all of that. But what hasn't necessarily gotten as much media attention is the grassroots organizing that's now happening on the right, which is absolutely, to me, more terrifying than what happened on January 6th. I mean, these people are now dumping money into school board races. They're dumping money into local elected offices across the country. They are working to now change laws and, completely strip away, strip down our right to vote and hinder people from being able to vote now. And to me, the scariest part has been what has happened in the aftermath and how, I mean, right now in Pennsylvania, we are in a fight for our lives to save our Pennsylvania Constitution. It's just terrifying. If they're successful in enshrining voter ID in our constitution, in not allowing counties to get any funding to count their votes, but then requiring that the votes have to be counted by 8 a.m. the day after election day, but not allowing you to get the funding to be able to count the votes. I mean, it's just clear they're trying to make it harder for people to vote. They're trying to cling on to this power, and they are infiltrating our government at every level. And that is absolutely horrifying to me.
Jenna, did you think this when it first, has your initial reaction changed basically, given what they've done?
I mean, my initial, I think I had a lot of initial reactions, definitely not surprised. I definitely was not surprised by it. I think it's been a long time coming, and Trump did everything he could to fan those flames. I think my initial reaction was just kind of, I don't know that that has changed much, because my initial reaction was like, just imagine if these people were not white. They would not have made it they would not have made it to the Capitol steps, even. The Capitol steps would have been lined with the US military before they would let a group of Black people get that far into the Capitol building, even if they weren't there to cause destruction. And I think that it really just proved what a lot of us already knew, in that, America is racist. And they are willing to storm the Capitol building to keep America racist. I think that initial feeling has now grown into, from just disgust to actual fear of what they could potentially accomplish through changing our laws and taking over government in official ways.
I'm kind of trying to think back of what I was feeling at that moment. And I think there's a difference between surprise and disbelief. And but yet there's, I guess I've been trying to reconcile it all, because in another respect, of course it happened, right? Like, and somehow those things still all existed in my head in real time as it was happening. And it, what it makes, what it, where it pulls me is to 2015. When you knock on on over 5,000 doors during a campaign, you get to know who your neighbors are. And I think about Maya Angelou and how she said, when people show you who they are, you need to believe them. And I think that that statement right there can be applied to a whole country. When the country shows you who they are, who we are, you need to believe it, right? And I think that that's part of, like, looking at this, it's almost a confirmation of the opposite of what I thought America was as a kid growing up and going to college. And it's really sad. I mean, we're at the point now, speaking to Jenna's comment, where I think we are seriously like one breath away from the freaking Handmaid's Tale, you know, in this country, in this state. I mean, if it wasn't for our governor, can you imagine what Pennsylvania would look like right now? I mean, the craziness that comes out of Harrisburg, it's truly, and I know this word gets used a lot, but it's really terrifying. It really is terrifying in terms of human rights. Like, why are we even talking about human rights? Isn't this supposed to be the United States? Like, that kind of reconciling is just stunning to me. And I think I'll hold back on talking about the accountability part of it, because that kind of was touched on the edges a little bit. But just kind of reflecting back to my feelings at the moment, trying to reconcile those and thinking about Maya Angelou's words, I think they ring so true.
I think for me, I'm still kind of going around the horn about, you know, have our reactions changed. I don't think I think mine have. I mean, I was definitely, you know, Taylor mentioned, I'm not sure if it was before we hit record, but a lot of really raw emotion when we recorded it a year ago. And for me, I tapped into the fact that I was watching it with my immediate family, with my three children and my mother and my mother-in-law, and my eldest, Laya. You know, she said something like, you know, what do we do? What do we do with this country? And, you know, in our household, you know, we talk about politics and the possibilities for radical hope and optimism. And I was like, I don't have anything for you. I just don't. I don't know. And I, from that point to now, I think honestly, and I'm a little bit, maybe embarrassed, but I'm kind of numb. I'm still numb, you know, like intellectually, a lot of things you all said, of course it could happen here. You know, that's a phrase like, could it happen here, is a thing that people, you know, talk about. And I think the numbness, Dwayne, you said something that helped me. I think the numbness and I've just probably, I'm sort of describing a little bit of what some kinds of privilege are. That numbness comes from like the durability of wanting to believe in those myths of America, the durability of wanting to believe. And of course I can't. So I think, you know, and the other part of the numbness is like, in thinking back to like, I think that day or the next day, so many of the GOP leaders stood up and denounced it, and then how quickly they turned. I'm sure that in my, maybe even on a podcast, it really seemed to me, this is the moment when the GOP will rid itself of this fascist wing of its own party. And it you know, well, it's been the opposite. And somehow I'm still a little surprised by that. Like, I feel like I shouldn't be, but I'm still a little surprised by that.
This is sort of veering off of the agenda, but I just can't, like, even thinking about it in retrospect, I can't help but just think that we totally bungled the messaging on Donald Trump from the start. You know, I think all of this stuff you know, Russian puppets, buffoon, you know, quite frankly, even sexual predator, although he is a sexual predator, I think we should have said immediately, this man is dangerous to democracy and he's a proto-fascist. And that is why he is dangerous. And I think if we had just stuck with that one message, I wonder if this could have been avoided.
Not by our side.
I'd like to respond to that. And Taylor, I don't think that would have done it. And quite honestly, and this is maybe drawing on some of the Democratic Party stuff, you know, state committee gets together and invariably the conversation always comes up. Why do people do things that are contrary to their own self-interest? And so I don't see where saving democracy actually is the thing that would have prevented that. Like we all do that. And I mean, honestly, we're in the middle of a fucking pandemic and we won't take shots that actually protect us. We're not even concerned about our lives, our children's lives, or the other ones. We'll take any kind of garbage that conservatives want to throw at us, as long as it aligns with our racist worldview, we'll adopt it. And so saving our democracy, who the fuck cares about it? They don't. Obviously, they don't. You know, so I don't know that that's really the answer. That means that all the other things weren't the answer either, though, right? You know, in terms of messaging. So, yeah.
I think it could have maybe been avoided, but it would have had to have started like, you know, a long time ago. I think the Americans like increasingly have made higher education ungraspable for poor and working class people. And the only way that you can get, you know, your access to education is by going into debt for the rest of your life, essentially. And a lot of people don't, you know, want to do that. And so I think we as a nation really have to look at how our education inaccessibility over the years has actually gotten us to the point where we are now.
Yeah. And going off of that, there are studies that show that in the states that expanded Medicaid after the Affordable Care Act, Democratic vote share has gone up. You know, more so like as a direct result, you can see this, and people speculate maybe that's because it's either people had more time to focus on politics after, you know, more time after they had secure healthcare, or maybe they had to go to the Medicare office to sign up and then get enrolled. And
see, that's you just named sort of logical Republican critique sometimes of our kinds of policies, which is we're giving people things they like. And so they like us, right? They're like, oh, they're just buying votes. And I'm like, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. That's called
democracy, actually. Yeah.
We have one party in this country that consistently tells us we can't have the things that we want. It's impossible to have the things that we want. And the reason why we can't have the things that we want is because of the other person, the outsider, the person who doesn't look like us. They are constantly dividing us, and that's what they do. So that's the reason why we can't do it. And Janet, not only the affordability of higher education, it's also how we demonize it, right? Like the elites, right? The professors, they're the demons of our society. We can't trust people who have an education, which is undermining our healthcare. It's undermining all of society. Like they point to government and the very structures of society as being the problem, and then they create that problem, right? It's just this horrible cycle that feeds into each other, and they end up creating monsters that sometimes they regret. Look at Liz Cheney right now, right? She's fucking responsible for this mess, right? And now she's trying to flip the coin. Good luck, Liz.
Well, I just want to jump in on that too, because like Liz Cheney and I can't remember some of the other Republicans, like Mitt Romney, who like have done like a little bit of the right thing. And somehow I feel like the whole kind of, maybe this is from mainstream media, but like the context is like, we're all supposed to give them like a super big high five. And I'm like, I don't like, this is a horrible metaphor, but I'm known for that. Like when I was like I went to like a kid's, self-organized talent show, right? And there were like little like 6 and 8 year old girls who had done dance class, but the choreography was like sort of Britney Spears hyper-sexualized. And everybody was like clapping. And I was like, I'm supposed to clap because these girls are dancing, but I'm really creeped out at how sexualized it was. Right. So that feeling of like, you're asking me to applaud something that I don't want to applaud. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how I feel about like the Liz Cheney thing. Like, you know, like she's supposed to be this hero. And it's like you said, Dwayne, they made this creature. I just want to throw in something that I think is important. I was reading a little bit of a book by, called the, who's the guy?
What's a little bit of a book?
I read like the middle part, like oh. Dean, that's his name. But it was about like Trump's followers. It came out right before the election. But one of the things they said that I thought was important was, why did the evangelicals break for Trump in 2016? Because on paper, of course, it doesn't make any sense. He is the least kind of, moral. Yeah, he's obscene. He's obscene and he's ridiculous from what their espoused values are. Anyway, what they said was, like, if you go back to the 80s, especially when the beginning of the courtship of evangelicals began, it was lots and lots of promises about, you know, ending abortion, about making America more of a theocracy. I mean, that wasn't the language. And in some ways, the Republican Party, you know, dated but never married, right? They kept sort of promising. Reagan was also a little bit like Trump in that way, like twice divorced or three times. And he said the right things. And so when their point was, in 2016, a lot of those rank and file evangelicals, they looked at the field and their leaders were saying, we support Cruz or Rubio. And they were like, no, they look like the same old politician who doesn't deliver. Like, this guy delivers. So, sorry, that was kind of an extended piece of, like, I feel like there's this recurring theme of, like, forces in the Republican coalition galvanize their base and then don't deliver. And then that base comes and takes over the party. And then we're back to the Liz Cheney situation, where we're supposed to be congratulating her for removing her hand from the vicious dog she trained to bite her.
It's the perfect example of pissing on your leg and then telling you it's raining. Right. It's just it's all of that. It's just that's what happens with that. And it's amazing how it just it manifests itself in so many ways like that. Right. Hey, we'll message that it's this. And then how are we going to actually make that happen? Right. Like it's disgusting.
But I want to circle back for a second to avoidable. Where are we with that? I mean, I think, you know, and actually, Dwayne, a year ago, you talked about sort of a bright line between Sandy Hook, not directly, but kind of the whole, like, I think you were saying, the whole sort of gun culture, right? Sort of the sort of permissibility that, like, you know, you can take things into your own hands. That's where I think you were going with that. But anyway, I mean, I'll just throw out, I'm not sure there was anything in our sphere of agency, in our sphere of action, that was avoidable. This is when you said this, Taylor, about avoidable, is like, this is what occurred to me. We still believe in a multi-party kind of system, right? So like the avoidability, let me start over. The avoidability was in the hands of Trump and those folks. And our tools are mostly about persuasion and leverage, right? And for this to have been avoidable, the other side needed to do things. And so now I'm back to that. Like, We believe in this idea of a system of power sharing, and they don't. And that's really hard to undo.
Really quickly here, though, just to talk about the avoidability component. And I think that the three of y'all will really appreciate this anecdote. I was working in Wisconsin in 2016, trying desperately to get people to go out and canvass. I was working for a super PAC. I had essentially unlimited money to send people out, knock on doors, in this extremely crucial state. And I couldn't get anybody because they didn't want to do it. And then literally like 8 weeks later, I'm in a room with a bunch of people. It's a conversation about, you know, what happens, you know, it's just like, oh my God, there's 80 people here. Do you know what I could have done with 80 people for like 2 weeks? You know, it's just, talk about avoidability. People don't get involved. They need a, you know, I just, I can see it happening right now. You know, it's like people don't want to do the work.
I feel that in my soul, because knocking doors is our answer. Face-to-face conversation is the answer. We're not convincing anybody on social media. We're not convincing anybody through an ad or a billboard.
Certainly not podcasts.
We can't change minds without having face-to-face conversation. And even getting donors to understand that is a struggle. I mean, we're right now, we have our donors like, you know, what do we need to do to win in 22? And we're like, knock doors, knock doors, knock
it's
doors.
It's not sexy. Like, oh,
well, run ads, you know, and it's just like,
it doesn't, it's not sexy. It doesn't involve a new app.
I agree with those things. And we got to think of the purpose of knocking on the door too, because a lot of donors and a lot of people don't know the difference between organizing and mobilizing, right? Mm. That is key, because we really need to be knocking on those doors to organize, which means to grow our base, not take the original base that we have and turn it out, because that's not enough, right? We got to be able to organize. And there, that key difference, if there's one thing that could be better understood about our efforts, it's probably the difference between those two things and making sure that, like Taylor said, we do that organization. And Jenna, you just said too, that we do that organizational work that is required. And it is not transactional. You don't do it once and it's fucking done. You have to do it over and over and over again until everyone hears it all the time. And the persuadables we know are the people that when they hear things over and over again, it becomes common sense. And then that's what everyone's talking about, right? The right things, not how to swallow fucking bleach, right? That's what they were talking about. Shame on us, right?
Absolutely.
You're hitting me on all the right Gene McAuliffe levels, Dwayne. I love it.
Somehow we, it's a, you know, I shouldn't be surprised. We started with, was it avoidable? And we've got Jenna and Dwayne giving a roof raising sermon on door knocking. Does anybody want to, I mean, there, maybe there isn't a good solution to what I was saying, but I don't know if there was anything that sort of our side could have done a lot differently, right? Like broadly. I mean, if I think back to the summer of 2020, there were these coup prevention, Choose Democracy was the national label seminars. We did a lot of them in our area. I mean, the Anant Shankar Osaria has a good podcast out there about the whole count every vote, which is my, like, when people are like, Democrats always suck at messaging, I'm like, this was extremely good messaging. Count every vote.
The big lie was another good message.
Yeah.
Although they didn't create that.
Right. So where was I going? Oh, I mean, ultimately I don't have a great answer, but I mean, do you all agree that we're in a system, in an open, trying to be democratic system, there's only so much we can do. Like this is a case where we, you know, for January 6th to have been avoided, the key actors were not people that we have influence over. It was Trump and his cronies.
Yeah. And I think too, there's some people in the middle who just like refuse to believe what we were telling them. I mean, we've all been screaming from the rooftop since 2015 when Trump first announced that, you know, this was horrible. He's a fascist. Like, you know, all of these things. I called him a fascist in 2015, even. And just everybody was like, oh, no, it's fine. Like, nobody but a lot of
people
in the middle, you know, like the regular general population, were like, no, that's insane. You know?
I think this is like a slow motion car crash, right? And it's still happening. So I just want to say one word to you, and let's think about this question again about like, how can we avoid this? And that word is Benghazi, right? Just let's rewind for a little bit. Like, it seemed like every single goddamn day on television were the hearings about Benghazi. And it went on for months. It seems like it went on for years. Every single day, every single day, every single day, right? Now we had this insurrection that actually happened where people died, right? And they had to, like, they had to shut. I mean, it was amazing what happened there, the violation to the people's house and what was going on there. Why aren't we seeing that every single day on television, those hearings? What is the difference? I mean, I don't understand. I don't get why we are not inundated with what is happening right now with these hearings. Shame on us.
I just looked up, Dwayne, that the amount of time from beginning to end that was spent on Benghazi, that's not the total number of hours, you know, of committee, but it's longer than congressional probes into 9/11, Watergate, the JFK assassination, Pearl Harbor. And on the flip side, you know, the articles of impeachment were drawn up and passed by the House in like a week or something in 2021. I'm like, I kind of forgot, right? The riot, impeachment, and then inauguration. Like, that's kind of bonkers when I say it right out loud, because I think that's correct. It's got to be correct, right? Because they impeached before the new Congress was sworn in.
Well, I mean, I think it took longer because they were on a witch hunt. You know, like, you can't find a witch when one doesn't exist.
Those damn witches, they burn too fast. You know, I want some of those slow burning witches.
You know, and these other probes, you know, it was pretty clear. Like, they weren't just out looking for whatever thing they could or you know, whatever. It makes sense to me that the Benghazi thing was actually longer because they were just trying to drum up anything they possibly could.
Well, right. Sometimes if you're trying to find an answer, you can. And when you're trying to find something that doesn't exist, let me tell you about trying to find solutions to some of my technological problems. I want to pivot a little bit. And I'm curious about something that, well, let's do this, Taylor. If we think about this January 6th committee, and I have to be honest, I have not followed it super closely. I was a little bit like, someone's taking care of that. It's not my lane. Like, I haven't been like a news junkie reading up on everything. But, and so maybe you all have more facts, but like, broadly, like, what would we want from this January 6th committee, right? Is there something, Taylor, you set it up really well, that a lot of accountability needs to be done. I think you said at the beginning. Do you all have things that you'd like to see come out of that committee or that process?
Well, I want to know who helped them get into the building. Like, we know that even a congressman from our very own Pennsylvania, there was some text messages or emails, I forget exactly what it was, with Scott Perry. But I mean, we have proof that these folks had inside help, and each and every elected official who participated, supported anything regarding this insurrection should immediately not only be impeached, but you know, face criminal charges as well. I mean, that's just number one.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just number one for me.
Absolutely.
So, Jenna, you kind of like hit on it too. Like, what was the purpose of Benghazi? And you said exactly what it was. It was a witch hunt. They, you know, the goal from the people who were running that was very clear. What is the goal from, you know, the this investigation into the insurrection? And I'm not quite sure that that's been articulated, you know, like, I think to a degree, like, the surface, like, maybe from the 10,000 foot level, let's find out what happened, right? But even when you say that, that casts doubt on whether anything happened at all, right? So I don't think it's really, I don't think they went through the hard work of really messaging the purpose behind this. And if they did it exceedingly well, like, if that committee did it very well, right, this wouldn't be something that they would just find out for themselves. It'd be something that they would be able to have incredibly transparent to the entire American public, right? To the world, right? Like, I think that if it went well, that people would know, like the fact that we're saying, oh, I'm not really sure what happened. I haven't really been following it. You know, like those are all indications that the purpose is not being fulfilled or the best outcome is not happening because we're guessing or we're not really plugged in or what happened yesterday. We should freaking know that, right? This is our country, right? We should know those things. And so I don't think those outcomes have really been thought through or articulated really well. And we all get stuck in the process of who's like running away from the subpoena, who's going to be talking next, what did they have to say? We're dug into the process and not really think of why we're doing it. And if we do it really well, how could our country move forward in the best way as a result of that? And that's where I think that, and then once you do that, then you know, yes, we have to have it televised every day. Yes, we need to do this regarding the subpoenas. Yes, we need to, you know, it becomes very clear then what it is we need to do, not just like, well, today's Wednesday or Thursday, and we need to do this, or it's getting really close to the primary, so we need to kind of do it this way, or the clock's going to run out, so we need to make sure that we get this in. You know, it becomes very reactionary instead of really controlling the destiny of what that committee should be doing.
So Dwayne, as you were talking, I was thinking that what I wished would have been the most immediate outcome was passing the John Lewis Voting Rights Act bill, right? Like to me, that would have done so much more, not to directly address the process or sort of accountability of the people involved in January 6th, but to do more to inoculate the whole system and to get more people involved more directly in government and sorry, in voting and in getting power to use power for good purposes. So obviously this committee isn't that. I mean, there is a little bit, I'm kind of thinking back to something you said at the beginning, Jenna. I think, your organization and others are, and this is important work, are leaning into to defend democracy. And I think there's supposed to be a bright line between, right, like the Trump years and the lawlessness of the Trump. Sorry, I'm doing a Trump gesture on for our audio listeners. And defend democracy, right? Like for you and for me, that's a really bright, clear line of cause and response. But is it for other people? Is like defend democracy, you know, kind of the maybe the urgency of stopping fascism can get lost in that? I mean, that's a worry I have. And, you know, I talk about defending democracy too. So I'm not, you know, I'm definitely a pot calling kettle black here. Does that make sense that like, you know, Dwayne's saying like, what's the big picture? And I think a lot of us come to down to defend democracy, don't we? But that may not be a clear relationship between January 6th and the work that we're doing now.
I'm sorry, my mind just like out on that one. Sorry.
That's fine.
Defending democracy is tough right now, you know, because it's really tough. We're kind of in this like, what do we do? Right. Like at this point, it's so far gone that all we can try and do is try and drum up outrage to these bills in hopes that maybe they'll listen and not do it. But we're in a position right now with the Pennsylvania Republican Party where they just do whatever the fuck they want. Like there's mm-hmm. just, and now, you know, they've taken to amending the PA Constitution to bypass the governor. And, you know, so now there are just, a slew of constitutional amendments that are up for consideration. Our best hope, really, I think the best thing we can do to defend democracy is we cannot allow the Republicans to win the governor's office. I mean, that's like first and foremost, like we cannot give them the veto pen. I absolutely cannot.
My heart stopped for a second when when you said that, but yeah.
We're going to need a few, you know, we need the Supreme Court to make sure that we have our new legislative maps come the primary and not our old legislative maps, because we can't give them another cycle. And we especially can't give them another cycle if we somehow don't pull out the governor's race, because that would just be an absolute disaster. We have an opportunity with the new legislative map.
Which are still a Republican gerrymander.
Yes, especially the Senate map is not great, but the House map is pretty good.
It's good, but it still favors the Republicans. I just want to point that out.
It does slightly, but it brings those numbers closer together, and they're not going to have, like, if we can break their basically supermajority that they have right now, where they're going to make it where they need every single one of their people to vote yes, they're not going to be able to get as much of this garbage through. Like, it's, they're just not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it kind of, it's kind of like all comes back. Like, the biggest thing we can do to defend our democracy right now is, like, make sure that all of our people get out and vote.
Yeah.
Well, and going back to your door knocking, we need to make more of our people.
And in order to do that, we need to get out there. We need to knock every door.
I just want to highlight something that Dwayne said. Are we just managing our decline? Are we content with that? That's fantastic stuff. And I mean, I've noticed this thread amongst Democrats and those on the left, like that, where we've basically just already lost 2022 without even stepping onto the, you know, onto the field. Stepping up to the plate. I hate that. Are you kidding me? We can still win. I hate this bedwetting. People have already lost, and we will lose if that's the mentality of the majority of people coming into this election. This is the time where we absolutely need to dig in and determine the future of our country.
So I'm making a commitment. I've made it several times to several different groups of people. In fact, I even said it to Josh Shapiro, who's running for governor, right? I'm now living in Scranton. I just moved up here. I'm in the blueberry in the tomato soup of Northeast PA, right? Stealing Ted Cruz's line about Austin, Texas, right? And I'm going to kind of be a little bit old-fashioned about it. I cannot wait until I am carrying our future governor, Josh Shapiro's petition to every single door that I can in my district living in Scranton, and be an example to everyone else on the Lackawanna County Democratic Committee of what it actually means to be a county committee person for the Democratic Party. I'm going to be a resource for all of my neighbors so that they can get information about who is on the ballot and what they stand for and what they're fighting for. I already had someone come to me and ask me for support. And I said to them, I don't support people because they have all this experience or because they know this person or they worked on this campaign. Tell me what you're going to do. What are you doing? Are you going to have monthly meetings? Are you going to actually do some fundraising? What is your plan for being able to grow our party? Like, what do you, once you get those things to me, and the response was, well, I'm going to need a little bit of time to get it together. I'm like, yeah, you are, because I'm not going to endorse you and I'm not going to be like carrying your name unless I know that kind of stuff. Get your shit together if you're going to run. Like, I've had it. Like, we need to dig into this stuff. We need to have these conversations. We need to grow our progressive movement. And I am kind of excited about 2022 in Northeast PA because I have made that promise to myself. Like, I remember when I first got involved in politics, I looked at my husband at the time and I said to him, I said, you know what? If we're going to get involved, we were talking about getting involved in a campaign, and it was for a House seat. On our House of Representatives, our state house, PA house. I said, if we're going to get involved, we have to be committed to it. You can't do it halfway. And what I meant by that was, by the end of the campaign, we need to be able to look in the mirror and know that we did everything we could in order to make this happen. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with this democracy. That's where I'm at with this party. That's where I'm at when I say we are a breath away from a handmaid's tale. I am not exaggerating. We need to win this governor's thing, and we need to do it all. All of us need to get out there and do this work. I'm committed to doing it, and I hope that I can provide an example and maybe some inspiration to others. And if you're listening to this and you don't know how to plug in, DwayneHeisler@gmail.com, or check out the hub, or check out Action Together NEPA. Get in touch with us, okay? Get off your ass, send an email, send a text message, send a message. Honestly, it takes one Google search, no excuse. Get in touch and figure out how you can plug into this.
Wow. If you can hear my voice, reach for your phone. Look, somebody came into Dwayne's picture. He's so effective. He's bringing people into the neighborhood.
They're already knocking down the door, right? There we go, right?
I wanted to add, you know, on Josh Shapiro, you know, as a criminal justice, formerly incarcerated person and a criminal justice reform activist, I was not particularly excited whenever, you know, Josh Shapiro was going to be the one. But I was at a fundraiser with him a few weeks ago, and I had serious reservations about whether or not he could win. And I heard him speak at this fundraiser, and he sold me. Like I was like, wow. Like the answer, particularly what sold me, was the answer that he gave on democracy defense. I would do it in justice if I even tried to repeat it, but it was absolutely incredible. Actually, sidebar, we are having an event, a Facebook Live event tomorrow from noon to two with Josh Shapiro as the keynote speaker, where he will probably give much of the same speech. So please check it out on the Better PA Facebook page. And if you can't watch it live, it'll be up. He blew me away. He really did. And I was like, I'm all right. I'm all in. Let's go. I'm ready to knock doors for Shapiro. I think he can win. Like he convinced me. And I was a skeptic. So, yeah, absolutely. Shapiro is going to be exciting. I think we have some exciting things happening in the Senate race as well. I personally am a big fan of Malcolm Kenyatta. I think that, Kenyatta could really help Josh Shapiro with, bringing out the votes in Philadelphia that we'll need to bring out. I would love to see a ticket with Shapiro, Austin Davis, and Malcolm at the top. I think that I really think bringing out that would really bring out the voters and the new voters we need to bring out in order to win.
Yeah, I think we have fantastic choices for Senate, and Malcolm Kenyatta actually took the time to call me on the phone and make his pitch to me, which I actually really appreciated. And none of the other candidates have done that. I thought he was a very effective speaker, really centering immediately in the conversation the need for Medicare for All and really rigorous climate work, which are my two top issues. Maybe he knew that. I don't know. I continue to think I'll probably end up supporting John Fetterman, I'm still a three. If you know what that means, you know.
I've had calls from all of them. I've heard from Sims. I've heard from Austin. I was on the phone with Austin Davis for like 45 minutes or so. Yesterday, I got a call from Connor Lamb. I've talked with Josh Shapiro. They're all calling me and talking with me. And so I just want to double down on what Jenna said. We have some incredible everyone has said, we have some really, really great candidates. There's not a bad candidate out there, quite seriously, and there's positives and negatives to all of them. We think about, what's on their agendas. And I asked some really tough questions when I got those calls. it was kind of fun, to kind of put them on the spot, and it was interesting to hear their talk. I was talking to one of them and I said, I haven't heard anything about the environment. Is this just something that you're going to do afterwards? Are you going to run on it? Like, what's your messaging around this? I haven't heard anything. I'm the chair of the Progressive Caucus, right? Like, talk to me. you know, tell me what you're thinking about, right? Right? Tell me about that. And that's a really challenging, like, kind of thing to run in a state like Pennsylvania when we have the history that we do with coal and all those things. I want to hear about it. I don't want to be surprised by it. I want to hear about it. How are you going to be approaching these things? And so that was, I had some really interesting conversations. It really helps to inform me that they are so approachable. You know?
So listen, you know, you guys are all like A-list name droppers. The only Senate candidate who called me, I talked him into dropping out. So I was basically like, I don't think you can muscle out Connor Lamb, Malcolm Kenyatta, or John Fetterman. Those three are right away, and there's already six more. But anyway, but he's a great person and actually can do a lot. I think behind the scenes, the environment was really one of his signature causes. So I think people who think about running or run and then don't win are kind of an overlooked resource a lot. I think there's kind of a culture of, you know, dropping the loser, you know, from or something like that, which is ridiculous for the party. But anyway, I just want to, we need to wrap up, but I want to
come back. Final question?
Well, maybe. Taylor, you talked about repairing our relationship to the truth, and we were talking about the January 6th committee. And this is the hard part where, you know, it's kind of the double dutch of what we do. Those elections do matter. I have no expectations that they are part of that repairing our relationship to the truth. And I also don't know that a congressional committee can do that. But I was thinking about the question, you know, what should it do? And I do think, like, getting back into like that day, I think there's too much of an idea kind of floating around out there that January 6th was just sort of this spontaneous kind of riot or whatever. I think drawing the bright lines that there was a plan to convince Mike Pence to reject the electors and to literally steal the election, like, that's been lost. And if part of what the broad left needs to do is to basically to make it almost, we can't criminalize the Republican Party like in Germany after World War II, they criminalized the Nazi Party. Like, I'm not advocating that, but we need to make it completely untenable that this current set of Republican elected officials will provide succor, comfort and aid. What's it? Comfort and aid to the enemy, comfort and aid to what was obviously a plan to do a coup. Like that is something that I think needs to happen, and this kind of pussyfooting around it. And the other thing I'll say is, like, a lot of people have been arrested. Some are in jail. Fine. Like, I have a complicated relationship. I bet a lot of us do with the criminal justice system. And you know, it's a weird position for me to be like, go FBI. I do have this feeling, like, again, with a war metaphor, we're arrested a lot of soldiers, but not the generals, you know. We need to know who the generals were, and they are the ones who need to be held accountable. And we need to get past a kind of media focus on, like, well, there wasn't a piece of paper that said, go do this. I mean, maybe there was one. I don't care. But obviously there was a plan and there was a conspiracy, and that needs to be pulled out. So that's something I would hope that committee report should at least state, right? And then others of us can do the work and say, here is the definitive account. And it shouldn't have taken this long, right? Like, it's a year, right? Like, we should have known, like, in January, like, what all the pieces were. And the foot dragging on this, I think, has really, really hurt that cause. Anyway.
Yeah. So
last question.
We're shamelessly stealing this from John Lovett's podcast, Love It or Leave It. What do you give somebody on a 1-year coup anniversary? Jordy, you want to go first?
I honestly haven't even thought about it. Copy the Constitution. That seems lame. I'm going to throw that out and
okay.
See if
I have my answer, which will give Jenna and Dwayne a little bit more time to vamp and figure something out. Clipboard and pens.
Brass knuckles for knocking.
No, but actually, pro tip here. Bring a golf ball with you, door knocking. It'll save your knuckles, doesn't damage the door, and you can really hear it.
Oh my God, that is so brilliant. I never thought that is really good.
I've knocked on too many doors to not know that.
Yeah, I don't have any golf balls, but I'll
don't have any golf balls.
That is brilliant.
Well, that's a small problem. So I'll vacate clipboard and pins if one of y'all wants to take it. I'll bring buy some golf balls, but not for the reason you think.
Wow.
A jar of, I'm going to make spicy impeachment marmalade, peach marmalade.
That's pretty lame.
Come on, we're trying to get merch for the pod.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Spicy peach.
Impeachment. It'll be peach mint. Impeachment jam.
Peach mints. You should just have impeachments. Not. Okay. Jenna, do you have a...
Save us, Jenna. Save me.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat what the question was?
What would you give somebody on for a one-year anniversary, the one-year coup-iversary?
Like the one-year anniversary for a wedding is the paper.
Okay, I see.
Flagpole, too soon?
Dwayne, do you have one?
Yeah. Yes. Flagpole to rainbow flag.
So when you first asked the question, my mind didn't go there. Like, you're talking about physical things like peach cobbler and golf balls and flagpoles. But where my mind went was like what I'm going to give to someone. I think so much of what they do is so like, if you ever want to know what they're doing, just look at what they're accusing the other side of doing. Like, they're going to steal our democracy. They're stealing the democracy, right? You can just go like right down the list. Like,
they're running a child sex trafficking.
They're the ones that are actually doing operation.
Voter
fraud. Yeah. They're it's so autobiographical, but so I think about like how they motivate people, and it's always based in like fear, right? Fear and hatred. And so what I would give someone is what counters that. And I think what counters fear and hatred, because that's how they do that. They divide us. They somehow stoke racial fears. They do all that stuff. Is, I think there's two things. So I would give them a double gift, one of inspiration and the other one would be some humor, because we are living right now in a really crappy world. I mean, that's a nice way of saying it. We have not only these pressures on our democracy and the very way that we identify with our own country, but also the pandemic as well. And it's really, and the next few weeks are going to be really, really tough. You know, the next 4 weeks, 6 weeks are going to be really tough. And I know that with the healthcare work that I'm doing, but just from my neighbors and friends that we all know, people who have recently tested positive and what that's doing to their lives and all of those things. And so I know that I could use a little bit of humor and a little bit of inspiration. And if we can start off the year with some of that, I think that's like putting gas in our engines to use the golf balls and the flagpoles and eat the peach cobbler if we have that. So that's where I would go.
Is that a wrap? Jenna, did you?
Jenna gets the last word.
I kind of like going back and forth between like, you know, something that's just funny and, you know, something that's more practical, like a constitution. You know, the ACLU has those pocket constitutions. Like, I think maybe we should just start going, go around and hand them out to every single person. You know?
I have the perfect idea. We get like a deck of playing cards, and each one has a picture of one of the generals and majors, one of the shot callers from January 6th, right? Like, we actually used this in Iraq when we were tracking down Saddam Hussein's cronies, right? They gave them out, but there was a deck of cards, right? And each one could have, you know, like in my house, we have like the kings of England or trees, like cards where each one has information, and each one could have, you know, Donald Trump would be a two of diamonds. I love that. You know, that would like so tweak his ego. Okay. We were supposed to give Jenna the last word. I'm sorry. Jenna, plug your event again.
Oh, okay. It's going to be a really good event. We're going to be streaming live from the Constitution Center in Philadelphia. We wanted this to be an in-person, you know, a big in-person thing, but COVID. So we have, we're still going to be at the Constitution Center, but we're just going to be streaming live to Facebook. We have Mary Gay Scanlon, Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon, is going to be opening, doing like our opening remarks. And then we're going to have a panel calling the Democracy Defenders Roundtable. It's going to be moderated by Philadelphia City Councilwoman Helen Gim. And then on the panel, we are going to have representatives from different organizations. Let me look at the list here. I don't want to miss anybody there. So we're going to have Katina Kenner from the New Pennsylvania Project. We're going to have Lena Me-Day-Tricht. I probably messed up that last name. She is from Common Defense, which is a progressive veterans organization that we are doing a lot of work with. We're going to have Mohan from APIPA, the Asian Pacific Islander Political Alliance, and then Nicholas O'Rourke from Working Families Party. So they're going to do about a 45-minute panel just talking about democracy issues. And then we're going to close out with a keynote speaker, Josh Shapiro. So
that's awesome. And I would say,
how can people follow your work?
This will be all streaming live from the Better PA Facebook page. I can actually drop a link in the chat.
Great. We can put that on
for the event. So you can add for people to be able to find it. Cause it'll be streaming, not just from Better PA's Facebook page there. We are, doing this event in partnership with Common Defense, Working Families Party, PA, All Voting is Local PA, APIPA, the New Pennsylvania Project. So it'll be streaming from all of those pages as well.
Excellent. Dwayne, how can people follow your work?
He already gave his email. What more do you want?
Yeah, gave my email. I gave his phone number. I don't know, carrier pigeon, that could work. Smoke signals, I don't know, two cups and a string. And go where you thought, Taylor. Hey, look me up on Facebook. I usually post some of the stuff I'm doing there. It's just that I kind of have my hands in a lot of different things. If you're living in Northeast PA, I would say check out Action Together NEPA. That's a good place to kind of start because I know they're working right now on there's a threat of a plant that doesn't look like it's going to bring anything good into Luzerne County that they're digging in on. I know with SEIU Healthcare, we are working right now with a public kind of, and I'll provide the link for you, Jordy, for a safe staffing push for publics to kind of weigh in on safe staffing, which is incredibly important, especially like during a pandemic. Like that's pretty critical. Here, I'll put the link right in here. You know what? How about reach out to your local Democratic County Committee? Every county has them. Find them, contact them,
run for yours.
And get plugged in. Get on it. Get on it. Yeah, I don't want to hear everyone demonizing about it and then they sit back and they don't do anything. Not allowed.
Yeah. Jordy, how can people follow your stuff?
Oh, well, it'll be in the links and all of that. We really are supposed to wrap up, but I can't. I'm such a sucker for breaking news. Dwayne just told us, and it's on the internets, that Daryl Metcalf is not running for re-election. It didn't say why, but like that'll be another podcast.
The wording of it was really interesting. It said legislative retirement.
Ah.
So AKA he's gonna go be a lobbyist and collect a very big check.
Yeah. We need a better revolving door.
He's nostalgic bad. He was bad before it was cool.
Yeah.
He's been bad since 1998.
We'll follow up on, I hope they can get somebody better from Butler County. All the links all the time.
Great. And people can follow me at on Twitter probably is, well, I don't even know if that's the best place, but at Taylor and Biden.
Okay, thanks everybody.
Came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to conch a hawking horse with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He said, if you can't take these twists and turns, man, I don't blame you. I saw this air, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. Been to Millview, Rockview, Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Roots, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Gillysburg, Orbisonia, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Wellesburg, Robsonia, Mountaintop, Glen Rock, Flat Rock, Sunbury, St. Mary, Schick, Shanny, Big Shanny, I'm a dandy. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley's fair, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. Been to Belfont, Southmont, Westmont, Womelsdorf, Nordmont, Dormont, Lebanon, Hummels Wharf, Cedar Springs, Bowling Springs, Chess Springs, Center Bridge, Centersport, Leesport, Williamsport, Brackenridge, Lumber City, Central City, Lake City, Clearfield, Westfield, Winfield, Richfield, big deal. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley's fair, man. I leave the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man.